goes high towards Taylor. Walsh got there ahead of him though. On care plays it back in again. And no offside. And Taylor has scored. And that surely means it's the Premier League for Swindon Town now.
Welcome to episode 24 of the Wash Bag Swindon Town FC podcast. Town's miserable away form continued into 2014. Since we last spoke, two successive 2-0 defeats have perhaps shattered some aspirations for a playoff finish. Fortunately, luck was actually on Town's side yesterday as we finished off unlikely 3-1 victors, a result that really flattered Swindon, as we'll discuss later. Meanwhile, there's finally some movement in the transfer window as new signings arrive at the county ground as Smith and Record join Barker. Well, it's time to welcome my guests, and a warm welcome to Adam Tanner, who joins us again on the podcast. Hi there.
Hi.
And also, I finally buried the hatchet with the advert, Sam, over Vic Morgan's blog being exclusive. I've had a ban, Sam, literally, for a long time.
Yeah.
We've not talked at all, so, you know.
Really excluded good. From all your press conferences.
Yeah, you've had plenty of exclusives you missed out on. So, a warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Reluctantly, the ban's over. So, you know, we'll come on to the adverse ban later, but it's the first time to sort of reflect on the Shrewsbury victory. Adam, how do you see the victory? It was unlikely as the match progressed. I mean, I actually thought that it was quite embarrassing. Into, you know, it was great to come away with a win, but 3-1?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd certainly have snatched a hand off for a point with 5, 10, 20 minutes to go. Obviously the weather made a bit of a mockery of the first half. There probably wasn't much to speak about. We scored from a corner. We're getting better at scoring for set pieces. And I wouldn't say against the run of play, we scored out of nowhere, which is something we're capable of doing at home. They pulled up a decent equaliser. And I think by then it was just a relief to get inside and wait for the weather to calm down a bit, which it did. But, unfortunately, in the second half, we just didn't get any momentum going at all. The two centre-backs really struggled, the pair of them, unfortunately. It seems as if the emphasis on playing from the back, come what may, maybe we should have turned away from that a bit yesterday. We didn't, and Ward and Branko just weren't making a good fist of it, and we got away with it a few times. Westport's had a trouble with some good saves, and it's a bit lightweight in midfield again. I still think there could be more of a role for Louis Thompson in there at times. I think we lost the battle, although we got some good footballers in there. I just don't think we worked hard enough at times. And I suppose the only positive aside from following him were the two strikers. Ranger, when he came, was excellent at both ends of the pitch. I felt a goal and assist and a few decent defensive headers, and an encouraging debut from Michael Smith in all sorts of ways. And two deserved goals to cap that off. So
I mean, Sam, the actual game was such a difficult one to watch, particularly that second half. And as Adam sort of touched on with the defensive errors, I mean that was one of the worst performances by Town centre back pairing for many a time.
Yeah, it was a funny old one, wasn't it? They just seemed to lose all ability on the ball. And Branko has got a tremendous amount of ability on the ball. You saw that a couple of times in the first half when he went storming down the left touchline, run around a couple of players. But I guess everyone has off days. And to be fair to those two, they have been improving. In what I can say with Branko improving, he's only been in there for four games, but they have been showing signs of improvement as a pairing in recent weeks. For whatever reason, it didn't click. I don't think we should be too quick to judge them on the basis of that. If it continues at home, like it has been away from home, and the nervousness in defence when the ball is at feet, then there's something to worry about. But maybe just for one game, put it down to a bad day being affected by whatever. But it's certainly not something you want to see, having a centre-back lose the ball in your own box when he's trying to play it out.
I mean, there's been a lot of criticism about Ward performance this season. Obviously, Hall's come in for a lot of criticism. Are you surprised then that Cooper hasn't gone out there yet and actually secured a more experienced centre-back at all?
Not hugely, because the club are very confident that both Joe McEverley and Nathan Thompson can play at centre-back. They're convinced that both
Nathan
of them can.
Thompson.
Yeah, they're convinced. The players are as well, so I presume that has been tried in training and that they're happy with that. I know, obviously, Nathan is very good on the floor. He's a terrific tackler. Aerially, you don't know. I mean, it's actually shown in a competitive game at centre-back, you don't know whether it would be.
I'm surprised at that. You know, next thing I'm going to hear that Niall Rangers is going to be in goal or something at that rate. They are quite, you know, fluid in terms of the players changing around. I mean, goodness knows where Burn's going to play half the time at the moment. I mean, pretty much you know when, you know, Luongo and Kazim are going to be playing, and the rest of it's all complete muddle, to be honest. Mm. But, you know, if they're confident about that, I mean, Adam, you know, sort of, you know, in terms of the centre back, would you be bad to see, or can you see Thompson there? Or?
Well, he played as part of a back three at Oldham right back in October, which, well, we lost the game, we were poor. I think as part of a back three, it's obviously different because a shorter guy can effectively be a spare man. So, I suppose for what it's worth, McCormack used to play at centre back, who's a much shorter guy, and his reading of the game helped.
But it was a bit different then because we were playing such a high line that he could get away with playing a midfielder.
Yeah. I mean, all I'd say in defence, I don't get me wrong, I can't see Thompson making a career centre back either. All I'd say in defence is that we're obviously working to a limited budget, and they want more options further up the pitch. Mm. Which obviously, if you're making substitutions in a game, they tend to be in the front third rather than the back third. So I can understand to an extent the club trying to scrimp and save on defenders. But having said that, if the performances back there don't improve, and we know that Hall's out for a while, and McEvely, he's been substituted three times in the last month or two, so it looks as if some of his old niggles are coming back. We may need another body back there just to, if anything, to put a bit of pressure on players, including Ward, because, yeah, on the whole, he's been a decent player for us, but he's effectively under no pressure for his play. Sometimes that isn't healthy. And if...
Well, of course, because he's played, as you pointed out, Sam, 100 consecutive games.
No, it's 68. He's played 112 previously in his career. He's now played 68 in a row.
Still an awful lot, though.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's towards credit, because he's clearly got lots of attributes, and part of the reason why he's played that number of games, well, firstly, he doesn't get suspended, he doesn't make silly rash tackles, and also he's clearly good at looking after himself. But there are also weaknesses to his game, and I think, I don't know much about his previous career, he's obviously had a good career, but I think he's 35, and maybe for the first time in his career, he's being asked to play the ball, basically play a different style to what he's been accustomed to over the last 15 years or so.
And he's not the age where you would naturally fit into playing something new as well.
It's about teaching an old dog new tricks and all that. Yeah. And whereas Grant Hall's far from flawless, I think he is a lot more comfortable on the ball, and I think he does suit our system well in that respect. And as Sam said, Branco's shown good signs on the ball. He certainly, let's say, struggled with the conditions yesterday in terms of his long balls basically just flying out of play. But with Ward, I think it's maybe a bridge too far at this stage of his career.
Yeah, okay.
What I would say about it, though, is that they require leaders on that pitch. And Ward is one of very few leaders in that squad, natural leaders, mainly because of his age and the fact that the rest of them have hardly played any Football League games. So if you take him out of it, who's the guy who gets into the players' heads? Who's the guy who knows what it's like to be in every situation that you could possibly be in a football match? And he's the only one. Mm. I mean, Ryan Harley is probably as close as you get, but he started maybe a third of the games this season. Mm. He's not got a regular place, and he's going to find it hard to push out Kasim or Luongo. Obviously, Mason, when he's injured, he'll probably play instead of that. So it's, I think, a lot about the psychology, and it's certainly seen away from home, even though it might not be working. They've got to have someone who continues to rev them up, because they're struggling when they concede first away from home.
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, sort of move on to some of the positives from yesterday. Obviously, Michael Smith's sort of performance, which is fantastic. My dad's called Michael Smith. And, after he got his first goal, you know, when the PA announcer announces, you know, Michael Smith's on his debut, it's like that dream moment. Oh, he had that dream moment that he scored the first goal for Town. But he had a really good performance, and especially sort of first half, Smithy had that run down the right-hand side, beat two players and got a great ball in. Unfortunately, there was no one in there in the box, because naturally that's the position that he would potentially be in. But, Sam, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better performance on a debut from a player. I mean, fortunately, you know, in the right position for the second goal and in the right place for the first one.
Yeah, it was particularly encouraging because it seemed like every aspect of his game was just about there to fit in with the side, apart from the natural knowledge of where his teammates would be, which comes with time. And linking up with Ranger, for instance, I think those two as a pairing could do a job away from home, just two of them up front. His touch on occasion was a little bit loose, but you can get away with that in League 2. and still keep control of the ball, whereas he can't really do that in League One. And I guess that tightening up his touch will come with playing more games. But he certainly has the ability to hold the ball up, and he's got a poacher's instinct, and you know that's what you want out of a striker. When you've got a guy who knows exactly where to be to score a goal, then you're sorted, a la Charlie Austin, Simon Cox. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, that's quite... Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily put him in that sort of
not yet
bracket, but yeah. I mean, how old is he? Is he 20?
He's 22.
Okay. So he's got a bit of... I mean, how... Obviously, he went to Charlton, you know, with Cooper originally at Darlington. I haven't really gone into much detail, investigated his time at Charlton and why he never sort of... How much action in the first team did he actually get, if any? Or,
almost none.
And did they just pick him up originally as a prospect? And
yeah, that was exactly it. And it's hard to force your way into any team in the Championship as a prospect unless you are something truly sensational.
So he would have been purchased by Charlton when they were in League One?
It was 2011, so I try and figure out.
Yeah,
when
they probably
was.
Would have been then. So yeah, so obviously, if they would have stayed around that level, we potentially could have worked up into the team. You know, they obviously progressed, but with them fighting down the bottom of the Championship, they're not really going to kind of draw in blood. Something like that. I mean, Adam, what would you make of his performance all round? Just did you go into the game thinking that he, well, first of all, that he would start, or that?
I suppose we probably got the sense in the last part of the week that he'd start. We had a few more fairly negative range of comments coming out from Cooper. We know that he missed training because he was ill in the week, and so it seemed pretty feasible that he would. He's obviously been playing a lot of games for Wimbledon, so he's got a reasonable level of match fitness. And I'd pretty much echo what's been said. He took both his goals very well. His general play was good. I think he had a couple of, I suppose, crowd/management pleasing bits where he's tracking back 60 yards to win the ball, etc. Whether you want a lone striker to do that is another discussion, I suppose, but fair play to him. He did look comfortable on the ball. As you said, that was an excellent run and cross. He put him down the right. So he lasted 90 minutes, was still going strong at the end. And just signs linking up with Ranger. I agree that they could be an effective partnership.
That's the issue, though. It's obviously, it was important yesterday. I could see the reasons why Cooper wanted to put two up front. Particularly as well, just to try out the pairing. But the problems that caused in midfield in the second half when Town were playing the diamond, and I mean, it obviously contributed a small part to actually Shrewsbury actually getting into the game, the amount of possession, the amount of chance that they had. I mean, I'd actually say that they were more unlucky not to come away with a victory than Peterborough a couple of weeks ago. I mean, they had some fantastic shots to Shrewsbury, obviously hit the bar as well. Fodringham kept us in the game, and it was. I was worried that he wasn't going to get man of the match, because typically sometimes the goalkeeper isn't recognised and for that, and his performance was absolutely superb. Yeah. And we haven't seen Fodringham tested and do saves like that consistently throughout the game at home for an awful long time. But like I was saying, you know, with two up front, our midfield was completely overall. And I mean, there's a lot of people on Twitter after the game talking about, obviously, a lack of width. Why weren't we playing with wingers? Well, we haven't got any players in those positions anyway. But, I mean, how can we play two of them? I mean, that's the problem, is how it works with the midfield and how they're set up.
Well, I would imagine that he does that by playing three centre-backs away from home and having two wing-backs. I don't think that he needs to do that at home. I think that one of Ranger or Smith would need to start and have two of the smaller guys running angles off him, but away from home you can play the 5-3-2, 3-5-2, and that should naturally give you width, because you're meant to have that safety net of having three at the back.
Thompson
and Byrne going down either side, and then you can have a very tight midfield three. Alternatively, you go to 4-4-2, in which case you need two natural wingers. And I don't even think that Pritchard is a natural winger. I think he's a 10. So there is Tijani Race, if he ever gets back from his knee injury. Maybe Byrne could qualify as a winger if he was to be put out in that position. He's got the pace and ability on the ball. Apart from that, that's not been the nature of the team. That's a Paolo Di Canio team. It's a 4-4-2. Yep. Wingers get wide, quick, powerful attack, and a ball in the box. The way that this team has been set up to play is patience in midfield, find the killer pass, and create the chance. So they haven't set up to have those wingers, and they haven't played like that. So to have two up top, I think, would probably end up requiring three centre-backs. And a lot of fans don't like the idea of three centre-backs, because on a number of occasions when it's been played, it hasn't really worked away from home. Oldham, Gillingham,
But neither is four at the back. So
neither is four at the back. Yeah, maybe they should try two at the back and just go for it.
But it's interesting. I mean, looking back to Di Canio and how his team was set up, and what Di Canio's team needed was a Niall Range or a Michael Smith. That is the missing link. And now we've got those players, and we haven't got the rest of the team behind it to play that way. It's funny how it comes around like that, isn't it?
Well, managers often seem to struggle to sign players in their own position, if you like.
Yeah.
And Di Canio clearly struggled with strikers. I mean, his favourite option was Andy Williams, and I did not like Andy Williams, and I don't think he would. I don't think he's in the same league as the forwards we've got at the club now. And to be honest, I think, especially away from home, what we really need at the moment is to see a bit more of Louis Thompson, because I think now that Kassim's playing a bit more advanced, they're just, at times there isn't enough discipline in the midfield. And
but do you think that Louis? I mean, Louis Thompson's inexperienced, quite young.
Yeah,
I mean, that's one thing that he doesn't have necessarily in that holding position is that discipline, and experience that perhaps you need a bit. I love his enthusiasm.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong.
The only thing I'm finding at the moment is that now Kassim's playing further forward. There doesn't seem to be, earlier in the season, Kassim was a designated holding midfielder. He was sitting a lot deeper, and now he's been given a lot more license to roam, which is fair enough. We've seen he can score goals, and he's clearly a good enough footballer to play further up the pitch. As is Luongo and Mason and Harley are in no way defensive players, really. So I think that when we've got three of those in there, that they're maybe at times too similar, and there's just nobody seems to be designated at the moment to be doing the dirty work. And I think Thompson played 90 minutes at Bradford and did really well, and that was our best away performance for a long time. And we came back from behind, we competed, we stayed in the game, and we finished the stronger the last 10 minutes. We could easily have won it. And I just think that was lacking at Stevenage. We had too many luxury players. We started with Ingessen, Mason, Pritchard, and we just weren't doing the dirty work in midfield. And as a result of that, I think a pretty ordinary team overpowered us.
I mean, we certainly need to. I mean, Lou Thompson's coming to the fore this season. I think you wrote a couple of weeks ago about the amount of games that he's actually playing now. He wasn't necessarily expecting to get that amount of game time, I think is what he said. I mean, do you see him playing a bigger role, Sam, between now and the end of the season, potentially in that sort of more disciplined defensive midfield role?
I think the issue that Cooper has got now is that obviously he needs to have Massimo Luongo in the team because he offers so much, but he offers so much going forward with his driving runs. Now, he can't do that in the position that he's being given at the moment, which is the low-lying midfielder. I don't think that works for him. It's that sort of way round has been put in so that Kassim can play further forward because obviously he's had an impact recently, but also to accommodate Mason within the team as well. And I think that Ryan Mason's injuries have scuppered his early season form completely, and that maybe it's a time to put Massimo back in up the top, and either to have Lewis or to have Ryan Harley sitting deeper, because I think the Ryan Harley out of all of those apart from Lewis is the most natural to sit in there. So I think that he could have a part to play, whether or not that Cooper will think that he's got the mental strength to be able to do that for another 20 games is to be seen. But I think he's more than capable, and he's shown that. He's played 18 times this season. That's plenty.
Good, right, so having a quick look at the other results yesterday in League One. It was a bit of a golf fest, so it's a bit of a shame there's no Football League show on last night. But we got Oldham coming to the County Ground next week. They scored 5. Walsall were away in midweek. They scored 5 at Notts County. Seems like we're going to be on a bit of a defensive hammering. We definitely need these strikers to kind of, you know, we're scorer. 5 there, score 4, I think, at the moment.
The odd thing about Walsall, though, is I had a quick look at the table this morning. They've got more points away than at home, and they've only scored 15 goals at home. So they're, I suppose...
Well, they're the anti-Swindon,
yeah,
aren't
in a
they?
Sense. I mean, they don't get me wrong, their home form's better than our away form, but there's an opportunity there because, for whatever reason, we know how good they looked at the County Ground. They're probably... They've played the part, really. And whereas they're clearly having a great season, they've won less than half their home games. So... Yeah, it's certainly a game we can still aspire to get a result from.
And Brentford winning the other night as well to make it... Well, they haven't lost...
It's 9 consecutive wins that they've had now.
No, they got a draw last week, didn't they? Away.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, yeah, they did, yeah, you're right. At Walsall.
Yes, but they're sort of top now. Bristol City losing a game towards the bottom, which is fantastic news. But Swindon still... flirting around the playoffs, and giving us that sense and that hope that we're going to get there. We've got the game in hand over Walsall and Peterborough. potentially... Well, that game, the hand's not for a couple of weeks, though, is it? Because it's the rearranged Crawley game, isn't it?
February.
So that's a while away yet. I said at the start of the season, you know, a top 10 finish would be fantastic this year, considering off the field and various sort of changing in personnel. But a lot of Swindon Town fans, Sam, were really, you know, infused by early season form, and kind of it's all in grasp. We should try and get it. But to get that, we need to improve the away form.
Yeah, and I think at the beginning of the season when we chatted, and they were sort of saying, if we come 20th, that'd be all right. Having had everything that's happen.
Did you say that?
I didn't say that.
I try to remember who said that now. Was it?
It was the other, whoever was the other one on your podcast at that time.
Might have been Daniel, actually.
Yeah, could have been.
And 20th then would have been something that fans would have accepted. You never want to come 20th. I think they've put themselves in a little bit of the predicament by their own making by playing so well in patches that people know exactly how good they are when they get their mind to it. And therefore it's so frustrating when they go away from home and just can't pick up any points. So as it looks, you would expect them to finish somewhere between 8th and 12th because of the fact that they're winning almost all their home games and losing almost all their away games. And that's probably not going to be enough points on the basis to get in the playoffs. And if they get beaten by Walsall, that means Walsall go up to 48. And they're still 5 points off the rest of them in there. So it's tricky. I think they've got to start picking up away form. And however they do it, I think it's probably psychological. They're going away now and just not expecting to get anything out of it. And if they can breach that block, that mental block, and they can pick up maybe 3 wins away from home in the rest of the season, then maybe if they continue their home form, they can make a playoff place. But I'm still not expecting a playoff finish. Yeah.
But I mean, yesterday's game against Shrewsbury kind of showed that we are perhaps a mid-table team because of the manner in which that we failed to really counter with their threat and were lucky to actually get the win in the end of it. I mean, do you think, Adam, that match was kind of a good sort of barometer for the season, really? Where, you know, we're fortunate at home now. Yeah. I mean, previously we were going at home and actually coming away with a really convincing win, but we haven't had
no.
that. You know, Coventry wasn't, Peterborough wasn't. This is the third home game in a row.
One thing I'll just probably say about those last three home games is I doubt we'd have won any of them without Ranger. I think he got 2 assists against Coventry. He's pivotal against Peterborough, got the first goal and was generally really strong. And I think yesterday made a big impact when he came on. So yeah, the margins are pretty fine. And I think yesterday was probably the first time that the team's had to play in really difficult, really bad conditions. And it clearly isn't really geared towards that either. And that's something that could, you know, whether it's, you know, more wind and rain or a bit of ice.
Well, they had a bit of that at Gillingham as well, wasn't it?
To be honest, I wasn't at Gillingham.
It was a bit windy at Gillingham. They're going to come up against these situations. It wasn't particularly nice at Macclesfield either. No. We know what happened there.
But then if Town are playing, you know, trying to play a passing game, then doesn't that suit?
Theoretically, it should work.
It should work. Mm. So it's not as if, you know, we're pumping balls up there and they're getting blown off course and it's all about the aerial challenge and it's hard to judge. It should be, you should be able to dictate and control the game. It was surprising that we couldn't yesterday.
Yeah, somehow, obviously with the way the second half was, although the conditions were better, somehow the way that the first half had become a bit farcical because of the weather just seemed to really throw the team off course, and it took us a good 40 minutes to get any kind of grip on the second half at all. I agree that there are no, the signs, although we've won our last three home games and the first two were sort of good gutsy performances against pretty good teams where we sort of hung on in there at the end and you could say we deserve the points. Yesterday was clearly a bit different. And you take the last 4 or 6 games as a whole and there doesn't look to be enough there to suggest that we're getting anywhere near the playoffs. But the opportunities are still, take Tuesday for example, if somehow we can go out there and turn the away form around and produce a win, suddenly, rather than being 8 points behind Walsall, we're 2 behind with a game in hand. And then
we're going to get carried away.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, let's win the league. Right, anyway, sort of moving on to, it's good to have Sam here this week, so we'll have a little talk about his ban from the county ground. And I'm surprised at the picture in the paper, you didn't have your arms folded out when you're outside the county ground.
Well, I was being told what to do by the photographer. I'm particularly uncomfortable in front of a camera as it is. So.
But it's normally the adverse standard, isn't it? When you're kind of, you know, something you're angry about, something you stood there with your arms crossed. But I bet that was a bit of a strange experience for you. I mean, as a journalist, you're gonna write things on occasions that don't please a manager or a club in the sense of being honest in terms of what you see. But this was an entirely different situation where you reported on information that was already in the public domain, and you couldn't foresee what was going to happen afterwards.
No. It was a strange one. Obviously, the club have made it clear that it's not for that, just that isolated incident in their eyes. I am aware of one other piece that I know caused them a few problems, which was the interview run with Steve Murrell at the beginning of December.
Oh, what? The one after
he'd left.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, at no point was I advised that what I was writing was going down in such a way that I was risking being banned. I know that the club doesn't always want certain information released, as anybody anywhere would have. They're running some sort of company or institution. As a paper, we're there to provide information that we feel is in the public interest. And we don't just make snap decisions on what runs. We will have proper discussions about how it would affect the club, how it would affect our relationship with the paper, and whether we're duty bound to report it, because that's what the fans and our readership deserve to know, because they're paying for the information. In this case, it was sparked by that Nile Ranger thing. If it was that alone, I would be furious and I would have absolutely no understanding of what it was, because there was no breach of trust. There were no journalistic guidelines broken. I say the news was in the public domain, thanks to Mr. Hunt and to Niall himself a little bit later as well. And Darren Ferguson, via the press officer at Peterborough, confirmed that he knew that Ranger was in the starting lineup, but involved in the game, because he walked into the ground at the same time as Ranger coming off the bus. So all of that was fairly peculiar. But if there are these other series of issues, and like I say, I only know of the one, then I would have hoped that I would have been made aware of what they were more regularly or more clearly, so that at least I could have had that discussion with the club as to figure out exactly what was going wrong. It's happened. They've made their point. Their point has been taken on board, though it's not going to change the way that we report what we report. Obviously now some of our access in terms of the news that you don't get organised for you in terms of going to press conferences and matches has obviously been cut a little bit. The stuff that's fed out of the club doesn't come our way has been made obvious in the past week.
Particularly with the new signings, it's gone by BBC World Show.
BBC. That's unfortunate. Obviously, we'd rather it wasn't that way.
You like your exclusives, don't you, as I hinted at earlier?
Everyone likes their exclusives in journalism. It's a funny old word, and it's... you never want to be scooped as a journalist. When you're getting fed information from the club, then it makes it easier to be first with the news. At this stage, we're not getting fed that information from the club, but that's their prerogative. It doesn't mean that we're going to stop looking for stories, for instance, the Ingeston story that came out on Friday. And the Michael Smith stuff, I had actually gone to the club on Tuesday early afternoon.
And they denied it.
And their line was that they absolutely denied it to me. Now, that might have been because it was still at a stage where it was in the process of being negotiated and it was sensitive. I would have hoped that if they want to recreate this relationship of trust that they feel was broken or wasn't there in the first place, then they would have advised me that that was the case and that maybe it would have been better to sit on it for a few hours. But they chose to say, no, it's not true. Obviously, therefore, we didn't run the story and it came out elsewhere later in the day. Again, it's their prerogative. I would like to recreate that relationship that I had before. Whether or not that's possible, at the moment, I would say that it's probably not. That doesn't mean that I'm going to stop looking for stories. It doesn't mean that I'm going to stop talking to certain people. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to keep doing my job, because at the end of the day, I believe that I've only done my job, nothing more, nothing less, and that's what's led to the paper getting banned. It was a strange sort of moment for me personally, having followed the club for 19 years, just sort of been saying, no, you're not welcome at this club anymore. Mm. Thankfully, that's only lasted a week, so that side of it has gone. But, we'll see whether it resolves itself. It's just a very strange, peculiar situation to be part of.
Yeah, no, well, at least you're back in the fray, so to speak, and they've removed the ban. I mean, it's a strange one because Adam, is, you know, as readers of the advert, and you know, on the website as well, there's plenty there which is has been alleged, say, over the course of this year, and other things behind the scenes that have been put out there into the public domain. The advert could have reported on that, delved into it deeper. There's a lot of dirt there which could have been potentially brought up there. I mean, you know, in terms of, I can't see what the paper's done to piss off the club in any other way, really.
Absolutely. It just seems like a really strange PR move from the club, from Power, because I think, obviously, the public image of a chairman is quite important, and for various reasons, there are a lot of club boards, directors, chairmen who have a negative image with fans, and it's very easy for a negative image to develop, and it seems like an unnecessary way in which to almost make the club's fans feel that they've got something to hide or some kind of arrogance about them.
It makes it public, because it could all have been done, you know, a meeting between, you know, the advert and the club to go out, but now we know that there is something going on there and we want to know what it is.
Yeah. And especially under these circumstances, well, as Sam said, we won the game, Rangers scored, they knew he was in the team anyway, fans had sort of got a grip of what was going on, as well as the opposition. It just seems like an odd situation in which to kick up a storm.
Strange one. Hmm. Well, I'll be banned next anyway, probably, so I'll try and say something horrible, write something horrible about Power anyway. But it's interesting, anyway, Jed's banned, so...
Apparently.
Yeah. Anyway, wrote earlier this week about Town's record when winning, losing and drawing at half-time, and a quick one now on sort of the impact on the game. Essentially, the sort of reviewed some of the statistics this season. It's actually staggering to see that when Town have been winning at half-time, 90% of those games, those 10 games, 9 of them, Town went on to win, 1 went to draw. The complete opposite was true when we were losing at half-time. We'd lost 9 of the 10 and drawn the 1. I mean, Adam, is it purely the importance of the first goal? Is it something that Cooper isn't delivering at half-time? Is he not this season, when Town have been in a poor position going into the break? They're having their oranges. Why hasn't he been able to turn it around?
I don't know. Plan B doesn't seem to be a strong point, especially thinking of a lot of the recent away games. Like, reel them off. I wasn't at Julian, but take Stevenage, Sheffield United and Macclesfield and Oldham. For example, all of those were against teams who were, you know, either bottom half teams or lower division teams, where you should have a feasible chance of getting results against. And I feel that in all of those, the last 20 minutes, half an hour, has just been too comfortable for the opposition. We haven't had, in any of those games, a consistent spell of pressure or really looked like scoring or getting back into the game. And sometimes the substitution, I know we don't have the biggest squad or anything like that, but we do have feasible options on the bench. You know, we have players like, we usually have central midfielders to spare. We have players like Story, who, yeah, he's very raw, but he can make an impact, as we've seen. And I think, for example, in both the last two away games, we've been a goal or two down and he's brought Byrne on for Nathan Thompson. Okay, Byrne's maybe a slightly more attacking option, but that, I don't think that's the kind of change that's likely to put the shivers down the opposition. So I do think part of that has to lie with Cooper. But I said that on the other side of the stat, is that when we're in front in games, we become quite adept at seeing them out.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you could certainly throw the Peterborough and Coventry games in, you know, to that category. And we had that spell years ago, probably under Danny Wilson, where the last 10 minutes you just dread them, because we had such a poor record of giving late goals away. And from memory, it's a long time since we've blown a lead in the late stages of a game. So that's the flip side.
Yeah. I mean, Sam, is it purely down to inexperience of the side as a whole? They are a young team, or is it more to do with just the majority, say, of those games where we've been behind, have been away from home? It's just, you know, the away form has been a bit the problem, for instance.
I think it's psychology again. The majority of them are away from home, but noticeably, for 10 minutes after Swindon conceded a goal away from home, they look completely shaken. And you can put that down to inexperience, but they have been playing together for more than half a season now. So whilst they haven't got the experience of...
As a whole, as a profession.
Of a profession. Yeah. They do have now 6 months' worth of playing together and being in similar scenarios. Mm. So they know the feeling of it. You would think that they would be able to adapt that way around, because there's no doubting their ability. They're one of the best footballing sides in the division. And that should be home or away, regardless. So I believe it has to be mental. It has to be a psychological thing now. When they go behind, when they go away from home, there is something there that is not allowing them to play with the fluency and rhythm and composure and confidence that they have been at home when they score first. And it's very strange. And I'm not sure exactly where it would lie. I mean, maybe a sports psychologist is the best person to try and give you some sort of explanation for that. Because I don't think it's anything to do with, really, a huge amount to do with tactics or personnel, because the same tactics and personnel have worked on other occasions. Yeah. It's not like there's been a certain set, a formation of individuals that just don't work together that Cooper just persists with. As a group, there might be individuals that have not performed that he's persisted with. But so I would put it down to psychology. Mm-hmm. How you break that is anyone's game.
Sure. I mean, I've only been to one away game this season. That was at Wolves. But so I haven't seen the impact on the players this season. I mean, to what extent? I mean, Cooper's one thing he's not afraid to is to actually change things. Substitutions, there's been frequently quite early in the second half generally, and formations, it could be 4-5-1, 4-3-3, changes second half. He's not afraid to do that. But to what extent away is the mentality, we go behind, the first thing we've got to do is to stop conceding again. Is that really the mentality that the team look at? I mean, do you...
I don't necessarily see that. I just see them getting very flustered after conceding one. I see the home fans of the place that they're playing being, you know, their boisterous selves after just scoring a goal, being loud. And it seems to just shake the Swindon players, just briefly, but it's enough to put them off their rhythm for another 20, 30 minutes. And it's just getting over the fact that they've conceded a goal. I think it's as simple as that. Because they go behind, away from home. They very rarely come back and get anything. Bradford, they got a point.
Yeah,
Bradford.
That's the only time
that's
since
individual
Coventry.
Effort, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's the only time since Coventry, which is just after Cooper and McDonald came in.
Yeah.
Bradford is the only time away from home that we've gone behind at any stage and not lost, which is, considering the number of times we've gone behind,
stat
is
alert.
A really poor stat.
Yeah. That's... Wonder why.
I think it's purely got to be psychological. And you can continue to blame being a young side and being inexperienced, because partially is probably correct. But the players believe in themselves before a game, and after the game they're very confident in their ability to bounce back the next game and prove that it was just a one-off. But it's never a one-off, so it's nothing to do with their ability. And I don't think it's a huge amount to do with the tactics formation, because Cooper went to Colchester, played 4-6-0 and played very well, played it very effectively and won. Went to Sheffield United, tried to do it, played appallingly and lost.
I think 4-6-0, we had a spell earlier in the season where we were playing very attacking, including Wolves, where we were admittedly unlucky. We were playing very attacking football against some good teams, and it was just a bit too much. And we suddenly went from very attacking to very defensive, and it did work well at Colchester. We deserved the win. I just think it caught them completely by surprise. And by the time they'd sort of taken stock of what we were doing, they were 2-0 down. But I think the secret was then out. And I remember, prior to the Crawley game, their manager said something in the press along the lines of Swindon are probably going to play with no strikers.
Yeah.
And okay, we got a point at Crawley, which is fair enough, but it was a pretty dire game. We had no shots on target. And by then the secret was out. But Cooper carried on persevering with it until it became really, like the Sheffield United game, until it became really poor. And to an extent, 3-5-2 early in the season was the same. We did it at Rotherham out of blue and beat them 4-0. And then we carried on doing it at Oldham and Macclesfield. Macclesfield was obviously the low point. And so we have had this pattern of him...
Well, he needs the element of surprise in terms of tactics, but then he's only got a list of... And he's probably exhausted most of
But I think that's belying the ability of the players. It's not to say that Cooper is obviously doing the wrong thing, but I think you've got to trust players that can play as well as they can do. And I think he does trust a lot of them, but there are some players which are so erratic in their performances that you try and compensate for that by trying something new that opposition teams don't know. But unfortunately now there are very few formations that will be new for an opposition team, so they'll have scouted 3-5-2, 4-5-1, 4-4-2, 4-3-3, 4-6-0. They'll have seen Swindon play in every single way, so you can sort of prepare your team for whatever.
If they do an 8-1-1 next or something,
why not? Should get a point, shouldn't it, really?
Just the wall. Actually reminds me of Exeter turning up at the County Ground about 4 years ago. It's very, very similar. Just a quick word, really, about news at Oxford United about Chris Wilder resigning or not. It does seem a completely strange move for him. I don't care, to be honest. But, they are doing reasonably well in the division. Northampton are bottom of the league and 6 points adrift. And it highlights that there's something behind the scenes at Oxford that isn't potentially right if a manager's prepared to leave a promotion chasing team. They were top of the league earlier in the season, albeit Northampton have maybe got a bit of money, I'm not quite sure, but Sam, it's a very strange one, and as a supporter it'd be very, very hard to take.
Oh yeah, I mean, imagine Paolo Di Canio leaving and joining Chesterfield, whoever it was, last year.
Yeah.
It's a bit different to that, but it's hard to ever know at a different club exactly what is going on when you're not embedded within it. I mean, it's hard to speculate about it. If you take the journalist hat on and put a Swindon hat on it's quite funny. But, you know, managers do sometimes make strange moves because it's the right for them personally rather than professionally. And maybe that's the case with this. But it would be
financially hinting.
Potentially, yeah. Potentially, but it's purely speculative. I don't know.
Speculate away. You get banned from the Kassam. There we go.
He's actually one of the longest served managers in the Football League as well. He's been at Oxford for since way back in his non-league days, I think.
Yeah, but that doesn't count because it's non-league.
Okay. Okay.
Got to remember.
Even so, I don't know how long they've been back in the league, but that's probably a good, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been there a long time. He actually signed a new contract in the summer, which is a bit... Because they've been playing below their... Well, it's a long time now. It's got to be close to 15 years since they had a season in the third tier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for a club that gets gate... What do they get? 6,000, 7,000 on the gate. That's disappointing. And
I had 4,000 there yesterday, I think.
Really? Because they haven't lost away this season, have they? They've got this strange...
You know an awful lot about Oxford.
Yeah,
What's that you're wearing underneath? It's a yellow shirt. Get out.
Yeah. No, definitely, their away form's a lot, for whatever reason, their away form's a lot better than their home form, which is irrelevant, really. But, it is a strange business.
Strange. Okay, well, thanks. That's all the time we've got. All that we've got time for this week on the podcast. Massive thanks to Adam and Sam for joining me. Probably speak to you in a couple of weeks' time. We've got Oldham next weekend, but I missed out on a wedding. After that, we're probably away, aren't we? So who have we got in?
Can't remember off the top of my head.
We've got Port Vale away, I know that. Yeah. So 2 weeks. I don't know who we've got after that.
Right, well, I'll speak to you in a couple of weeks after game to be decided. I don't know what it is. Yes, speak to you soon. Bye.